Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 177 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltak. Thanks for joining me again today. Now, we've got a huge show for you. It's going to be a bit of a long one because we got a lot of stuff to cover. But among those topics, more fallout from Trudeau's handgun ban victory lap, that bizarre, strange thing that he got involved with a couple of weeks ago. Well, it's still going. Also, the CCFR turns 9 years old. We talked a little bit about this in the last episode, but never had a chance to share some memories because we were pressed for time. So we're going to do a little bit of that today. Danielle Smith, Premier of Alberta, survives the UPC's leadership review with almost a 92% approval rate there. So that's pretty cool, as well as the amendments that are coming up to the Alberta Bill of Rights. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. And our friend Quick Dick McDick posts a very interesting gun control video. It's really an interesting reality check. Anyway, all that and more, CCFR Radio starts right now. Want to save hundreds on hunting and shooting merchandise? Want to support Canada's gun lobby in beating back the gun grabs? Download the free CCFR mobile app right now. Keep up with what's going on in the community, watch the CCFR podcast, and get exclusive discounts from dozens of gun stores and other CCFR business members. Available for Apple and Android users. The CCFR mobile app. Download it for free through your app store right now. All right, we are back. So a couple of things I need to cover with you before we bring Tracy on. Number one, I've got a variety of housekeeping items, and this includes our Black Friday sale and how you can source promo codes and stuff like that. All these housekeeping items I'm going to save for the outro, okay? So when Tracy and I conclude our conversation, make sure that you hang out. It might be worth your while if you're looking to buy some CCFR merchandise or some of the other things I'm going to talk about at the end. So just so you know, that's coming at the end of the episode. The only housekeeping item I want to share with you right now is the Willie the Kid contest is coming to a close this Sunday, which is November the 17th. So if you are interested in throwing your name in the hat for that, make sure that you do it right away because you're running out of time. So again, contest closes this Sunday, November the 17th. I will be drawing for the winner and declaring them in the next episode. So if you have entered that contest, I just want to say thank you. I really, really appreciate all the help. And we just couldn't do the stuff that we do or bring you television shows or podcasts or lawsuits or any of the other things that we do. We couldn't do it without you supporting the CCFR. So it's very meaningful to us. So thank you for that. Now, the other thing I just wanted to mention is Tracy and I just recorded the conversation that I had with her. And we talk a lot about, in this episode, the violence that is plaguing Canada right now. And I just wanted to add a little bit of extra commentary. I don't spend a lot of time on social media. And the social media platform that I've chosen to spend the time that I do spend is X, right? Because you have some level of free speech there. You can get your news, all your news links there. It's not like Facebook, where the Canadian government tried to extort Facebook in there. They're such buffoons. And now you can't get any news on Facebook at all. This is where people get their news now. That's just, you know, and Facebook are saying, I'm not going to help you, you know, promote Canadian media if you're going to try to make me pay to promote their product, right? Well, X is still free, you know, it's still open, which is great. So I tend to spend my time there and it's fast. So, you know, I'll have my coffee and I'll be on X Twitter, right? For I don't know, about 45 minutes in the morning while I drink my coffee and wake up. And then maybe at the end of the night, I'll be on there for another, whatever, 20, 30 minutes. But I get all of my information super fast because of the format of that platform. So anyway, the reason why I'm talking about this is over the last couple of weeks, you just see how much violence in general and home invasions and firearm-related violence there is going on and criminality there's going on in Canada right now. It is unprecedented. Unprecedented. And it exists for a number of reasons. And you're going to see where this conversation is going in a second. But when you look at things like these home invasions, where you have a group of guys, like three, four, five, six people armed with guns, booting people's doors in, and then going into the house, taking, you know, the keys to the car or the property, or shoot the people or whatever it is that they want to take from people that are living in that home, or walking up to somebody who's in their garage and shooting them in broad daylight. Or in the case of the Saskatchewan tradesman, Tracy and I are going to talk about it in that conversation, but basically an attempted execution for his vehicle, his wallet, and his phone in Saskatchewan, rural Saskatchewan. Like, you're seeing the level of violence is just, it's through the roof. It's off the charts. And the interesting part of this is, well, of course, the government is completely helpless to stop it. So are the police, right? The people are starting to tune in to the physical reality that the police cannot, they are not in a position to protect you from anything, right? If someone wants to kill you, or shoot you, or take your things, or beat you, or whatever, or invade your home, the police are completely and absolutely powerless to stop that. The only person that can stop it is you. And I don't want to be all cliche, but you are your own first responder. You're the only one that can do it. You're the only one that's stinking there, man. This is a physical reality that cannot be rationalized by the crazy people that we have in this national conversation. You cannot reason your way out of it. It's a physical reality. And so the level of crimes, the intensity of these crimes, and the frequency is all increasing. And here's the interesting part. It is actually sparking a national conversation on self-defense using firearms. I was looking at an account on X called Six Buzz, and that's more of a leftist kind of center or center left account that attracts the center or center left crowd. And if you look at a lot of these posts, when it comes to these home invasions or what have you, carjackings, all the rest of that stuff, people are starting to say, like, hey, we need to be able to protect ourselves because the government can't do it. And, you know, so I, you know, really one of the two points that I want to make is, there's a national conversation that's starting to occur, and it's starting to look a lot more reasonable, which it should have been occurring this whole time, for decades. And it has always been reasonable. It's just you have people that consider it, you know, that it's some kind of hysterical conversation, the idea that you could protect yourself from rape, assault, murder, or theft yourself, much less yourself with a firearm. But people are starting to realize that when you take that right away from people, or you withhold it, you're actually making them victims, and you're actually the reason why they will be raped, assaulted, or murdered, or have their things taken. So this is what I'm saying, is it is inherently, from a fundamental human rights perspective, inherently unjust. It's inherently a sin for the government to tell you, no, you can't do this. We're going to hold you down using the resources that you're paying for, hold you down so that criminals can make you a victim. If you try to defend yourself and you hurt anybody, or you try to defend yourself with a firearm, or you imply that you have a firearm for purpose of defending yourself from rape, assault, or murder, or theft at all, then we're going to point the entire criminal justice, apparently, air quotes, system at you, and you will feel the full weight of the system on you. You do not have a right to defend yourself from the criminals that we let come out of jail and that we give light sentences to when they do the most horrific, horrendous, heinous crimes. And when they do crimes like killing a police officer, we'll let them out on bail only to watch them try to murder or murder somebody else. And we'll let them out on bail again. This is what the government's been up to. And we're living in the results. So for me, you know, the conversation about self-defense with or without firearms needs to be had, and we need those rights in Canada. We need those rights. Now, as the reasonable gun lobby, I've never said, oh, yeah, well, we hand handguns out to everybody and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. We've never said that, right? If you look at our policies, we're saying that if people can use firearms for self-defense, then they have to be qualified to do that. and we can debate, we can discuss what those standards would be. Maybe we say, hey, you know, people can concealed carry as a private citizen if they meet the same criteria that law enforcement meets. So the same level of background check, the same level of competency with yearly renewals, stuff like that. What we're saying as an organization, and I'm saying as an individual, because I've always sort of said the same thing, is just give people a path. Not everybody will be able to do it, right? Because you also don't want people that are completely incompetent running around with handguns, because that does become a public safety hazard. Not a significant one, but problems can happen. But at least give people a path so that if they're unable to do that, it's not the government holding them down while they get victimized by the government's pet criminals. It's the fact that they weren't able to meet the criteria in order to maintain public safety when it comes to that stuff. So it's their shortcoming, not the fact that you have an evil government trying to do it. And I also have a real hard time looking at everything that's been going on lately and then thinking about what a badge of honor it is. What a thing that Canadian elites are just so proud that the government holds you down and lets victims have their way with you. You know, if you remember Justin Trudeau on that American podcast, Pod Save America is what it was called. You know, he sat there and said, protecting yourself with a firearm in Canada, it's not a right that you have.
And there are debates. And we have a culture where the difference is guns can be used for hunting or for sport shooting in Canada, and there's lots of gun owners, and they're mostly respecting and law-abiding, but you can't use a gun for self-protection in Canada. That's not a right that you have in the Constitution or anywhere else. If you try and buy a gun and say it's for self-protection, no, you don't get that. You get it for hunting, you can get it for sport shooting, you can take it to the range, no problem, as long as you go through our rigorous background checks. But there's a difference around the culture, and one of the things that we're seeing with the debate in the States is you get more and more of the American style, you know, right to carry, self-defense arguments filtering up through the usual more right-wing communications channels.
Yeah.
Sure. Like somehow you should be proud of that. You know, because when you say protect yourself with a firearm, you're talking about legal firearm owners. You're talking about good people protecting themselves. He's not talking about criminals. You know, a criminal using a firearm to rob someone or kill somebody is not a right you have. Like, we already know that. You don't have that right. You're talking about law-abiding good citizens. You don't have that. You don't have the right to protect yourself. So when criminals are busting, kicking your door in, and they have handguns, and you don't know what they want. Maybe they want just to take your life. We've already seen that. We've seen that in the last week here. You know, you don't have a right to protect yourself. And we'll make sure that the laws are written as such and the regulations around firearm ownership are written such that there's no way that you would even have the opportunity to use a firearm to save your life or the life of your spouse or your kids. So I'm very happy that people are starting to clue in. We're kind of getting shaken out of our fantasy that somehow we're morally superior because we don't let people save their own lives when they have the opportunity, because we want to feel morally superior to the United States, or we're just, you know, been browbeaten by anti-gun groups and irrational social justice groups, that somehow it's objectionable, the idea that we would protect ourselves from rape, assault, or murder with a firearm. Somehow it makes us less virtuous. It's completely insane. And I, for one, am very happy that this conversation is starting to leak into the mainstream and people are starting to think about it in more realistic terms than they have in the past. Anyway, it's an interesting dynamic that's happening. So we'll see where this goes from here. But anyway, thanks for listening to that rant. I appreciate it. You may have been noticing the same things as I have for the last little while. So we'll see where that goes. All right. That's all I have to cover with you. Let's get Tracy on the Skype. CTOMS has been a provider of trauma care training to military and police in Canada for nearly two decades. Now this emergency medical training is being made available to a wider audience through CTOMS online courses. Go to ctomsacademy.com and use promo code CCFR30 to get 30% off. That's ctomsacademy.com. And thank you so much to our great friends over at Vortex Canada. They continue to support the CCFR podcast and the CCFR Can't say enough about them. Check out all their great products at vortexcanada.net. That's vortexcanada.net. Vortex, the force of optics. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of the CCFR. With a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter, they have what you need. Plus, free shipping over $250, which includes ammo, or flat rate shipping of $17 under $250. Some conditions apply. Subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get first access to the hottest deals. A huge thank you goes out to our great friends over at the Saskatchewan Rivers chapter of Safari Club International. They do a lot of great work over there, including supporting the CCFR and the CCFR radio podcast. Check out all their great work at saskriversSCI.com. That's saskriversSCI.com. Okay, we are back with Tracy Wilson of the CCFR. Wilson!
Wilson! Wilson!
I never get sick of it.
Yeah, well, I'm almost finished my new studio renovation, and now I can be as loud and crazy as I want to be in here.
Oh, okay. I love that. Yeah. I'm actually, this will be hopefully the last time that we're doing this from my office as well. So my studio space is almost done too.
Awesome. Okay, we got lots of stuff to cover, so we might as well get started. The first thing I wanted to bring up for the first topic of discussion is the United Conservative Party of Alberta had an AGM where there was a leadership review.
That's right. So this was actually the largest political convention in Canadian history, with over 6,000 members attending. So I think when we went to the CPC policy convention, which was absolutely massive, it was just under 4,000. So 6,000 is huge. And of course, part of this convention and the AGM was to put Danielle Smith's leadership to the test. There's been some chatter back and forth on X about what that should look like. But in the end, she won with a solid mandate of 91.5% support for her leadership. So that's huge. So she is the reigning queen of Alberta at this point.
That's good. I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit before, and sort of the danger of, you know, in my opinion, the UPC has a pretty good leader. And in my opinion, Danielle Smith is incredibly courageous. I mean, they've tackled a lot of issues that people want dealt with that are extremely controversial. And she's done a fantastic job of communicating the reasonableness of, yes, of their position. And that is so rare. I mean, look around at every leader in Canada and figure out who's got the ability to do that. So, I don't work for Danielle Smith's campaign team, but from what I've seen, she's done a really good job. I mean, nothing ever moves as fast as everybody wants it to, but things are moving forward in Alberta, including their Alberta Bill of Rights. And I wanted to comment on that, but I think you had something to say about that too, right?
Yeah. So this was a pretty huge push to protect property rights and firearm rights. You know, there's some debate back and forth about what kind of teeth it would have, but at the same time, it would send a really clear message to the federal Liberal government on where Alberta stands in standing up for gun owners. And there was a grassroots group, the Black Hat guys, that were working to ensure that the firearm part was included in the Alberta Bill of Rights, because it was, you know, a little bit unsure for a while there. I shared some of their content online. They all wore their black hats to the AGM, and in the end, they were successful. So, I was glad to support that effort. And of course, we always support any government that wants to work with and for gun owners. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, as it applies to the Alberta Bill of Rights, yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to supersede anything that happens in federal law, right? But at least you know that there are provisions in place to protect you at some level from provincial interventions, right? So should the NDP get back in, you know, for please, Albertans, just, you don't need that. Don't do it. But let's just say that happened. At least there's some roadblocks there and to help Albertans, protect them against the government overreach, at least on the provincial level. And that would require, again, a majority government at the provincial level to peel that back. So, you know, does Alberta have the ability to completely protect their citizens against the federal government? No, but there is some benefits to that anyway. So it's not just a PR exercise, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
But anyway, yeah, congratulations to Danielle Smith for that 91.5% approval of her leadership, at least this far.
Yeah, I think that itself is historic.
All right. Now, in the last episode, we talked about Justin Trudeau's absolutely bizarre, tone-deaf, narcissistic victory lap about the handgun freeze a couple of years ago. And what a, you know, what a hero he is to the common Canadian, and how successful his government has been keeping Canadians safe. And we talked about that, I think, in a little bit of detail in the last episode. But gun control has stayed in the media over the last few weeks.
We've got MPs in the House of Commons going out on this like crazy. The media is talking about it. Law enforcement is talking about it. I think committees even been reconvened to talk about it. It's just like, here's the problem. And we've said it from the very beginning, is that as long as the focus is on licensed legal gun owners and their licensed legal guns, this violence is going to continue. And that's always been touted as, you know, gun lobby talking points. And it's just so wild to watch law enforcement kind of echoing the same thing we're saying, members of parliament, journalists, like, you know, these gun lobby talking points, I'm using air quotes now, are actually just mainstream truth. Like, it's the truth.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how it stayed in front of the public this whole couple of weeks. I mean, Raquel Doncho went out on it, both in question period and in committee. Blaine Calkins did a really great job. I saw that floating around. Again, great job to our social media guys, Brandon and Silas, for putting together all of these videos, finding them, putting them together, captioning them, getting them out there, and distributing them. But, you know, this conversation isn't going away, and it is interesting that you have groups like Poly Saint-Sylvain, you know, are like, oh, this person's echoing gun lobby talking points. That person is echoing gun lobbying time. And so, like, well, the police are echoing. Are we running the police now? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
It's just objective truth. It's physical reality that if you chase people around that are members of gun clubs and you let criminals out of jail when they literally shoot police, you're probably going to experience more violence. I don't know what part of this is so difficult for these people.
Well, they're really busy right now on Twitter. They've been tweeting all the stuff that you should be looking for your Black Friday sales, right? A couple of times a day, they're putting out, you know, they would like this specific model of gun band and that specific model of gun band. They say there are thousands of models of assault-y-styled rifle still available in Canada, and they're begging and pleading with Dominic de LeBlanc to just ban more stuff. So, you know, obviously they've learned literally absolutely nothing.
Well, it's interesting, as much of a tone-deaf group of ignoramuses the Liberals are, it almost looks like they're learning on the gun file a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Well,
I think Polly is trying to stand on them, saying, use OIC, you know, can reconvene the CFAC and start banning guns, you know, via OIC, and the Liberals aren't taking the bait.
No, I think that sponge has been wrung dry. You know, the public isn't supportive of any more of this stuff. We've been through it for 9 years, bans and bills and all kinds of stuff, and we've never been more violent. So we've tried it their way. It didn't work. I think we should repeal all that stuff, start again, and focus instead on actual crime, violence, and smuggling.
Yeah, I think
it's crazy.
Yeah, I think the Liberals are actually sick and tired of Polly. That's what I think
so too.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're the group that just, nothing is ever enough. They've absolutely destroyed the firearms community, and that still isn't enough for Polly. That's
no.
I think they're getting a good look at Polly right now.
I think so too. I think, you know, they've got way bigger fish to fry and way bigger problems. So.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, speaking of Canada becoming more and more violent and experiencing more and more gun violence through the roof, in fact, thanks to all the gun control, I guess. I don't know. I guess I'm trying to put two and two together. Our friend Quick Dick McDick did a really, what's the word I'm looking for? It's thought-provoking. It's It's just
impactful.
Impactful. Just did an incredible video. He does lots of great videos and really gets his point across in the way that he does it. But this story was really something, and kind of gives you, it's a signpost to tell you where you are in Canadian history right now. Do you want to give just an outline of that video?
Meet Orland Peterson, a 66-year-old grandfather who on the 24th of October of 2024 was working alone on a construction site north of Prince Albert, Saskatchewan.
Yep, that's right. 66 years old, still going to work. What a beauty. Got cattle, the guy works as a carpenter. These are the kind of people that have built this province and our communities that are safe places to take your children to school and to raise your grandkids.
Then a group of criminal come rolling onto the job site. Orland gets a gun shoved in his face and demanded that he tell him where his truck keys are and all of his valuables are, and then he gets clobbered in the back of the head with the butt end of a fucking shotgun. And once the criminals have his truck and all of his belongings, Orland is ordered up off of the ground, marched into a job site trailer, and the coward human piece of excrement says to the guy, "Sorry, bro, but I gotta shoot you," and pulls the fucking trigger. Orland miraculously survives because he's a tough old Saskatchewan bastard, walks a kilometer down the road to find help, and then eventually is taken to the hospital, and he's going to make her. So then RCMP issue a dangerous persons alert, and they wind up chasing down and arresting Melissa McCallum and Angus Heathen, and then they issue a wanted notice for Dallas Fulton, who is to be considered armed and dangerous. Now let's be honest here. The Mounties probably have a pretty good idea where Dallas Fulton is, and the Mounties probably have a pretty good idea who the fourth suspect is in this situation. And the Mounties are probably trying to do absolutely everything they can to lock this case down so that they have some sort of a chance to make an airtight case so that these bastards don't wind up out on the street again.
And you know what's probably going to happen when the Mounties do find these guys and get them arrested?
Absolutely nothing. We live in a country now where a 66-year-old man can't go to work in the morning without fear of being f***ing beat down on the ground and shot. And the dirty pieces of shit that did it to him will be back out on the street doing it to somebody else before the ink on the Mounties arrest report is even f***ing dried.
This is an absolute failure of government. Our justice system is a joke because there is no justice in the system.
You know, it's just to think that in the, you know, middle of nowhere, rural Saskatchewan, and this old lad just trying to do his day of work and, you know, contribute to society. And this is, you know, sorry, man, we're going to shoot you. And they do. It's just, I don't know. Like, that's, I think that touches home for a lot more people than some of the more gang related stuff that you see in the big urban centers. And yeah, I mean, I just think it's a tragic story, and it's very, very upsetting because it's the everyman story, right? It's relatable. And I've seen even people from the media, I've seen law enforcement starting to talk about that, because the one thing that could have made a real difference for that guy in that moment, like, thank God he survived. But he very easily could have not survived, right? And the thing that would have made the difference in that moment is a way to protect himself against a bunch of thugs with guns, right? So I don't know. It's almost like the liberal policies that were meant to, you know, have destroy the idea of owning a gun in Canada have actually made it more attractive to people. So I don't know. They've made a mess of it.
Well, I talked a little bit about this in the intro, and, you know, I mentioned, you know, on one hand, you have criminals that have no problem sourcing guns, whether they're from the United States or anywhere else, or stealing mm-hmm. them from people. And then at the same time, the law holds you down. You know, Justin Trudeau goes on a podcast and he says, oh, you know, defending yourself in Canada with a firearm is not a right you have. It's almost gleeful, you know? So I don't know. I think things are changing and people's attitudes are changing, and you're kind of seeing it even through elections, right? So,
yep.
And polling. All right, let's move on. Now, speaking of all this criminal behavior in Canada, and then on top of that, guns, there was this super lab that was busted in British Columbia just outside of Kamloops. And this lab was it was the most sophisticated synthetic drug manufacturing operation, I think, that's ever been found in the country's history.
Well, I was reading a little bit about this, and I thought it was a typo. I actually had to ask you. but it said there was 100 million lethal doses of fentanyl. And I thought, well, that can't be accurate. 100 million doses? I mean, that sounds ridiculous. Lethal doses? So you're saying you could kill Canada, the entire population of Canada, almost three times over? And you're explaining to me how potent these drugs are. They had a huge cache of illegal guns as well, explosives, body armor. This is a very sophisticated Mexican cartel super lab. And to think that that's existing right here in Canada, it's mind-boggling that the government's spending all their energy and all their focus and resources chasing people like you and I around. I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, well, number one, I want to know, because there was a lot of guns there. Like, I forget how many guns, but it was a large number, and they were not cheap guns either, because I saw the pictures of them. And there's some Chris Vectors, there was all kinds of other guns. Like, these are $2,000-$3,000 rifles. And I want to know what the people that got busted, what is their gun club going to do about this? Are they going to face disciplinary action from the board for this kind of criminality? Are they going to have to do a work bee?
Yeah, well, I tweeted something obnoxious like that today, you know, where these pesky duck hunters, you know, I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't so tragic, right? But I don't know. It's like we're in an upside down world. I'm going to find that red nose in Crystal.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And, you know, one thing I would mention as well is that this lab was so sophisticated that they were actually manufacturing precursors for drugs, which is you need a commercial, you know, chemical laboratory operation to do that, to make them from scratch. And it's interesting because I've had this conversation with a lot of people, and, you know, you've got the RCMP and the anti-gunners and the liberals and whatever, and NDP and Bloc for that matter. You know, they're like, oh, ghost guns is the biggest threat. It's like, man, 3D printing plastic frames for handguns, you know, it's nothing. It is absolutely nothing. Wait till you have criminals like these ones that have the resources required to buy CNC machines, actual CNC machines, like milling machines, and pay a machinist, you know, $100 an hour in cash to come and work for them. They'll be building real guns that will last as long as normal guns that you would buy off the legal market. They'll be making full-on, legal, fully durable, actual handguns and rifles and full autos. All that is available for them to do. And it always has been. And that's why we have this big, you know, I get impatient with anti-gunners. Like, oh, you know, nobody needs this gun. It's like, listen, yeah, we do. We need them for a variety of reasons, which we've detailed countless times. And if you're thinking about trying to stop criminal behavior, well, look at what the criminal, what you're up against. You're up against groups like this that can do like a commercial chemical drug manufacturing operation in the woods of British Columbia. There's no reason why they couldn't have three or four CNC machines and be flooding society with inexpensive, completely fully functional, fully durable firearms. That is absolutely easy for them to do. And so it's like, and I, you know, I know I'm going off a little bit about it, but it's very frustrating, because at the end of the day, if you're concerned about criminal violence involving firearms, then you need to address violence. If you address violence, not only does your firearm related violence problem go away or get mitigated, you know, whittled right down to some kind of manageable level, but all violence ends up getting eliminated, not just the firearm related violence, right? So deal with your violence issue, and all the other problems will solve themselves. It's like the budget balancing itself, except for real.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that we have anybody competent enough in this current government to do anything of the sort. So, you know, our best bet, I think, as a society is an election.
Yeah. What a mess these people are. Anyway. Okay. So we have sponsored the upcoming IPSC Nationals for next year. And there's a reason why we're bringing this up. What's going on with that, Ms. Wilson?
Correct. So for a couple of years now, we've been sponsoring IPSC Nats, and I've been going out to it, and it's a great event. You know, there's usually somewhere around 500 competitors. And of course, these are Canada's, you know, best and craziest handgun shooters. I love them. They're so fun. Every province sends teams, and it's just super competitive, and the Ipswich crowd is great. And, you know, they're under a lot of stress right now, because with the handgun freeze, of course, it's going to be very difficult to grow that sport if new gun owners can't come along and get involved. So we've been, you know, supporting their national championship. So this year, we actually have naming rights to it. So this year, the official event is called the 2025 CCFR Ipswich Canadian National Handgun Championships. And it'll be taking place from July 28th till August 3rd at the Tabor Shooting Foundation and MD Tabor Sport Shooting Complex in beautiful Tabor, Alberta. So I'm very excited about this. I'm going to go and talk at the banquet. And of course, we'll have our volunteers there, and we'll be selling swag and just supporting handgun ownership, because it's, you know, very much so at risk. But big thanks to Ipswich Alberta for just being so incredibly supportive of the CCFR and giving us that. So, you know, our name's on the event, our name's on the shirts, it's on the trophies, it's on everything. So, yeah, we love that.
Yeah, that's great.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, Ipswich's been really great to us, and we're happy to support Ipswich any way we can. It's really important to support the shooting sports, because the shooting sports tend to come in last, right? Obviously, hunters, the biggest group. You know, you don't need an AR-15 to bring down a deer, unless you do, right? Unless you're the government, then you absolutely need them. Yeah. But when it comes to shooting sports, you know, they tend to be set back a little bit in the political landscape, and it's really important that we support the shooting sports, so...
That's right. And if you have any questions about sponsorship or, you know, how we can support each other, send us an email, info@ccfr.ca.
Absolutely. All right. The last thing on our agenda is in the last episode, we did mention it, but we had so much content and so little time that we couldn't really get into the details. But the CCFR turned 9 just a few weeks ago.
I can't even believe it's been 9 years. Like, man. Sometimes it feels like it went really fast, and sometimes it feels like it's been 30 years, to be honest. But yeah, 9 years already. It's amazing.
Well, the big one is coming next year, 10 year, the first decade of the CCFR.
Yeah. Wild, yeah. Crazy, unimaginable.
And it's, you know, interestingly enough, anybody's life, you know, 10 years seems like a long time, yet you blink and it's like, man, that was 10 years ago. We've been through so much. So the first thing I'm going to say on this topic is, if, you know, I think it would be useful if you want to either get to know the CCFR, or you're just, you know, you just want to kind of take a stroll down memory lane. Like, what have you guys been doing for 10 years? Well, whatever, 9 years at this point, obviously, right? But don't forget, we are a group that tells you exactly what we're doing, exactly what we're doing with your financial support. So you need only go to ccfr.ca or firearmrights.ca, click Y join, and there's a list of everything we've done in the past 9 years. So you can scroll down that and be like, oh yeah, you guys did that. Oh yeah, you guys did that. Oh my God, I almost forgot about that, right? Like we've been around. So I think we were talking before we started recording, why don't we at least mention the favorite things that the CCFR has ever done, in your opinion? So what's your favorite?
Well, it's very difficult to narrow down my most favorite thing, but I would have to say it was the integrity tour. And that was during the 2019 election. We were struggling to get billboards. That's what we wanted. So we had done a billboard project, but we were trying to get billboards in cities. And of course, you know, a lot of these companies just simply wouldn't deal with us. And we came up with the idea, well, instead of maybe a billboard, what about like a moving billboard, like the side of an 18-wheeler or something like that? But of course, budget is always a concern. You know, we want to make good use of member dollars, and it would just cost a lot of money to have somebody drive a truck around and then what, stay in hotels? And, you know, what if people want to do interviews? Well, then you or I or both would have to go. And it was just this big confusion. And we came up with the idea, it was actually Colin's idea, to use an RV. So we got this RV. Well, we rented it because, you know, we're not going to spend money buying one. And it was actually super cheap to rent it because it's the off season. It was October. Nobody's renting RVs to go camping in the middle of October except us. So we rent this RV, got a really smoking deal on it, got a great deal on the graphics, wrapped this RV with this crazy, beautiful, terrifying liberal failure. We called it the liberal failure bus. And basically, we drove across Canada with it, which was nuts. We called it, instead of door knocking, like during normal elections, we called it door kicking, which was funny. But yeah, basically, we were in search of liberal integrity. I can safely report that we found absolutely none anywhere across the country. But we encountered everything from getting door slammed in our face to people, snowstorms, you know, getting stranded places, people delivering pizza to the bus door, doing meet and greets with gun owners along the way that were just amazing. And I'll never forget it. It was like 16 days of hell living in a tin can with you and Colin, but it was still probably one of the most memorable experiences of my life. And yeah, it was just, I think it was huge. It was a huge deal.
Yeah, well, the infamous Bill Blair interview came out of that too, if you remember.
Yes. Yeah, which made it all worth it, no matter what happened, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. What a terrifying experience it was, being so physically close to him.
Yeah, he's a big man too. He's got some anger issues.
He's big, and there's just something wrong with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember his eyes. His eyebrows were vibrating up and down, and it was very strange. I was like, I almost feel like
unsafe?
There's something supernatural going on here. I remember it was just an unsettling person to be around, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. So my favorite, just to kind of throw that out there, was the Integrity March. And yeah. I think for selfish reasons, like not the most effective thing that we ever did, just...
It felt good, though.
It was so magical. And
it was for gun owners.
Yeah. And it was like everyone felt the same way. People still talk about like, oh, I came to the Integrity tomorrow. And I'm like, and I always say that was a magical day. It wasn't like, absolutely, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was,
well, I'll never forget. You were doing interviews back at the hotel and PPS had called me, Parliamentary Protective Services, and said, your people are already gathering. You should get over here. And I thought, okay, I'll go over. There must be a few people arriving early. And I'll never forget, I'm kind of short, as you know, and I'm going up the steps of Parliament Hill, the big stone steps outside. And as soon as my eyes breached the grass level and I just looked, it was a sea of people, and I'm talking thousands of people. And everybody just kind of turned around and looked at me, and I was just like, oh my God. I remember I took a picture and sent it to you and said, get over here. But I couldn't believe it. We had no idea if anyone would even show up, right? Like, yeah. Didn't know what to expect. And boy, did they ever. They showed up.
Yeah, it was just perfect. It was everything we wanted it to be. Zero trouble. We left the city cleaner than we found it. We actually had people assigned with garbage bags, picking up garbage as we walked right at the back to make sure.
Yeah, whether it was ours or not, just pick it up.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you look at all the other demonstrations that you see, and nobody does that. They leave things, if they don't burn the town down and they don't create violence or intimidate people, they'll leave a huge mess, right? But
yeah.
Anyway, it was pretty good. But, you know, I think as far as projects that we've done, obviously the lawsuit was really huge. It's the biggest one in the history of the country on behalf of gun owners. But I think one of the most effective things we did was the Scrap C21 project. And, you know, with the range posters, with the posters sent to gun stores, or any business, with the video that I specifically made for my Senate appearance and sent to all the senators who basically all watched it, with our appearances as well, with the letter writing and just that whole thing. Now, again, people know how I approach this thing. I would never claim that the CCFR was the reason why the amendments in Bill C-21 were defeated.
No.
But we were a pretty big factor in it. And it was at least, because we've only existed since there's been a liberal government in place, mm-hmm. but at least it was the one time that I could point to say we threw everything we had at them and it actually deterred them.
Yeah, we got
something.
The result that we wanted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you
Can you imagine if we didn't do anything? We'd be sitting there with all of those guns, that 300 pages of guns, all prohib.
Oh God, I don't even want to think about that.
So
my selfish favorite thing that you've done is the dramatic takedown of Tlaib in House Committee during C-21. And you'll remember you went there to talk about the bill and you had prepared, you know, I think you had 5 minutes to do an opening speech on why we oppose C-21 and why it's hurtful and not going to be helpful. Here we are years later. You were right. But in any event, and then you get to the point where you're there to take questions. And all the questions were like, Tlaib complaining and whining about my Twitter account and how mean I am and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And just that takedown video, I'm going to put it on my social media again so everybody can see it. I watch it probably more often than is normal, but that was just such a delicious, savage takedown of that little guy. You just, it was beautiful, Giltaka, just beautiful.
Well, I don't know. It didn't feel very gratifying at the time. It was very uncomfortable.
No, but watching it back, you have to admit, like, you handled that really well because that was incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I guess if I were to take anything away from it, it was great practice for me.
Yes. Because
that was the most, I think it would, in the history of the CCFR, I know we're talking too much about this, but I mean, you know, if this episode's a little bit longer, that's okay. In the history of the CCFR, I've had lots of like what I would consider hostile interviews or interactions, but really there were two. There was the one with Tlaib, and then there was this radio interview I did with a station in Hamilton, and it was, the guy was Scott Thompson. That's who it was.
Oh, I remember
and
that.
It was just savagery. And I remember like that was the worst one. That was the first super bad one I ever had. And I think I kept, the angrier he got at me, the more I'm like, okay, I need to be even more calm with him. And I was quite happy with how that turned out, but man, I got out of there and I was just like shaking like a leaf because you have to exercise so much self-control. But yeah, that was a bad one. And then Tlaib was probably the worst one, where you're just sitting there completely shocked at the behavior of someone who's supposed to be a public servant. But anyway, yeah, that turned out
okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess sitting behind you, it was easy for my, from my seat to just kind of sit there and giggle. But yeah, just what a complete waste of committee time and taxpayer resources. And you delivered some traumatic blows there. It was wonderful. Beautiful.
I could do it a lot better now. But anyway, it was good.
I don't think you're going to get the chance. I don't think we're going to have any legislation before we have a new government. So
yeah,
knock on wood.
Can you, like, are you excited to look forward to better days or what?
I'm looking forward to actually, instead of just fighting and having to oppose everything, I'm looking forward to actually helping create some policy, right? Some policy that's good for gun owners, good for public safety, like making things better, getting things more fair, just being normal, like just normal stuff that's beneficial to all Canadians. I am really excited for that. I don't think it'll be time to take our foot off the gas and relax. It won't be a break. It'll actually be a whole bunch more work than it is just, lobbing bombs at these people. But yeah, I think I'm excited for it. And I would really, really like to see just a change in Canada, right? Just make it better.
Yeah,
it's definitely better than it was 9 years ago.
Yeah, it'll be a whole different type of collection of projects that we'll have to do. We'll have to be there to support the government.
Yes.
Not just show up and talk to them, be like, this is what we want. You know, this is how you can word it. I mean, there's obviously that work to do, but there's everything around the government to support them while they make these changes and make sure that they don't, as we said a million times, suffer terrible political consequences, negative political consequences for it. You know, that's going to be a lot of work because we want them to be bold. We want them to be courageous, mm-hmm. give us our stuff back, streamline some of the processes, tighten up where it needs to be tightened up, where they can actually catch criminals, you know, stuff like that. And it's going to be a lot of work, but we're going to get there and it's going to be better days.
It will be. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm a policy nerd and I love that. And I can't wait to get there. So
yeah, we'll get there. And of course, next year is the big one, 10 years, a decade.
10 years. I think next year is just going to be just an amazing year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of things to say. I was going to say, well, maybe I'll start drinking again, but I won't.
Don't. No. Stay on your diet.
Yeah. It's working out quite well. So I don't think I'll ever be doing that again.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, we've covered everything.
Okay, that's it. We did it.
I appreciate the update, and we'll see you in the next one.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right, so that's going to do it for episode 177 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for watching. I know I was threatening you all with a bunch of housekeeping items and a promo code in the beginning of the episode, so it's time for me to make good on that threat. So let's get started with that real quick. First thing, if you're watching this episode on YouTube, 70% of the people that regularly watch our videos on YouTube are not subscribed. And if you subscribe, it helps the CCFR in the search relevance and helps drive the algorithm across the entire platform. So really appreciate it if you're watching, really appreciate it if you're sharing it. But if you possibly could just subscribe, you don't have to hit the notification bell. Between you and I don't enable notifications in anything because it's just too much. I'd be overwhelmed with notifications. So I don't do that. But if you do subscribe, it helps the CCFR. So if you could take a second and do that, would greatly appreciate that if you enjoy the videos. Willie the Kid contest, as I mentioned in the beginning, it is ending on November the 17th. That's this Sunday. So if you want to get an entry and help the CCFR, go ahead and do that. If you have already or you're going to do that, I really appreciate the help. We're doing everything we can possibly think of, and the fight isn't over, and we will stay at it. So the only way that we can do that is with your support, and the way that we've been doing it all this time is from your support. So I really appreciate it. Just wanted to mention that. Next thing, Field Officer of the Month, the most important part. Field Officer of the Month for October 2024 is our great friend, Jim Carlton from Calgary, Alberta. Thank you so much for your work, Jim. Jim has been with us for quite a while, and he's an excellent representative of the CCFR and does great work for us. So really appreciate it, Jim. If you've forgotten or didn't know what you get as a Field Officer of the Month at the CCFR, you get a year's free subscription to Canadian Access to Firearms, otherwise known as CATF, graciously monthly donated to us by Donovan Dewis over at CATF. So thank you so much for that, Donovan. You also get a $100 promo code for the CCFR online shop. And of course, you get mentioned on our television show and on the podcast. And Donovan's been putting field officers' pictures and CATF and a personal thank you there. So that's really cool too. So thanks again, Jim. And now the promo code thing. So what we're doing for a Black Friday sale for the CCFR online store is we're issuing a promo code, but it's kind of an incentive. So if you join our closed Telegram group, we will send out a promo code on Friday, November the 22nd. So try to be in the group by the 21st. If you join our private Discord group, and that's for CCFR members only, you have to be a CCFR member to be in the Discord group, there'll be a promo code there as well. Or if you're on the CCFR app, so you have to be on the app by Thursday, November the 21st, in order to see the notification that will pop up on Friday, the 22nd. So if you're not on the app, it's awesome. We're getting great reviews from the app, and it's actually quite handy. So get on the app as soon as you can. If you need instructions for the app, just go to ccfr.ca or firearmrights.ca. Look in the news items. There's a story all about the app, and there's instructions there on how to connect your existing membership to your membership in the app, or just buy a new membership through the app. And then you've got, of course, your membership card there. You can take advantage of all of the vendor discounts that we have there exclusively for CCFR members. And do that by the 21st, and you'll end up with a 10% promo code for a Black Friday sale online. So Telegram, Discord, or the app, if you're not in any of those things, get into at least one of them, and you'll get 10% off promo code for our online store for Black Friday. Now, the links to the Discord and the Telegram, because they're closed groups, well, closed group in Telegram and a private server on Discord, it's difficult to find them. So an easy way to find all of these links, the invitation link to Discord and whatnot, is to go to our Linktree account. So if you've heard of Linktree, you know what that is. If you haven't, it's just a website where you have a Linktree page, or a page, pardon me, and every single link for everything that you have that's online will be there in one place. So Here's how you get there. www.linktr, so it's almost like part of tree, .ee. So Linktree with a dot between just before the first two E's there, /CCFR, and you'll find every link to everything we do on the interwebs on Earth, okay? So that's a great place to find the invitation link to the Discord server and then to get to Telegram and, of course, to the app as well on Linktree, okay? So 10% off for Black Friday. That's how you will source it. Anyway, thanks so much, everyone, for watching and listening. Really appreciate all the support. Take care, and we'll see you in the next one.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.